This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. I'm your host, Matthew Lanier, and I am joined by your PowerShell hero and mine, Chris Fikes. Hello there, Chris. It's been a while.
It has. It has been a couple weeks. That is for sure about that.
And, yes.
But, but I do love PowerShell, and I use PowerShell on Linux. Please don't hate me, people.
I mean, you're everybody's hero. I mean, you're helping, like, a whole bunch of people with PowerShell scripts. You've helped me with some. You've helped some other school districts with some. So you're the PowerShell hero.
That is the right tool when you're running a Windows domain.
It seems to be that way. I mean, it's almost like they designed it that way. It's crazy.
Who would have thunk it? Hey, I'm just happy I don't ever have to create user accounts anymore.
Yeah, I know, right? It's just... Yeah, because you automated that whole process. I mean,
you just
download a CSV and it watches a folder and does it, or do you have to instigate
and
it?
No, it'll just do it. But I'm actually about to have the CSV process automated too.
Oh, there you go. That's even better.
Yeah, I'm going to be out of a job soon. That's the goal.
automate all the things, right? That's what we're going to do. But yeah, it's been a while. What, 3 weeks? I guess we were off for something, and then. Some just got super busy. Well, I was moving some things, I think. And
yeah,
then,
you were moving. And then last week, I think it was my fault last week.
Yeah. And then I think the week before I was in San Antonio at TCEA, which kind of brings me to some follow-up about these HP Chromebooks running AMD chips. I talked to an HP person there about these particular Chromebooks because we're kind of interested in maybe looking at some other vendors because of the, like we talked about that one time about the keyboard failures with the 100Es and just past experiences with keys falling off and things like that. We're just thinking it's like, you know what, maybe if we spend a little bit more money, maybe we can get a little bit better Chromebook. And so HP is one of the ones that we're looking at. I mean, and we've heard some good things about the Chromebook 11, G6, I think is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to someone at TCEA, which is like Texas Computer Education Association, something, I don't know, it's weird. I'll put the link in the show notes to that. But they had a big convention, and I went. And so I talked to him about it, and this is what I found out. Found out two very important things. Well, three. One, Intel is having a problem manufacturing chips right now. There's a shortage of the chips that they use in Chromebooks, and so AMD's not having that problem. So the HP 11As, A for AMD, is in stock, can be readily purchased. And here's the kicker. It is cheaper, and it is faster than the Intel counterpart. What the HP person told me.
For all those chip people, it is using the old Bulldozer architecture, so it's not the new Zen stuff. So it's not as fast as Ryzen, but it's still way better than any Celeron that you could put in anything.
I don't know. She said it was like 11 to 16% faster, I think is what she said.
Yeah.
So that's faster and cheaper. That's good all around. So.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's just don't expect a Zen. It's not a Zen.
Well, I mean, it'll get there eventually, probably. Their lower lines will get faster. But as always, it's probably going to be crippled by the that SD card that it runs on.
EMMC.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the name of the storage. I mean, it's so terrible. That's probably going to be its bottleneck no matter what processor they put in it, mm-hmm. as long as it's not an Intel Atom, like old school netbook style. So.
Oh, gosh. You know, I actually have an Atom system here.
Oh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry.
It's a single core Atom too.
Oh, that's just, you know, we had those donors choose projects that we had going around, and some people got some of those Lenovo like N22s, N23s, and they got the Windows variant of it. It is like so bad. I literally installed Office on it, gave it back to him, and told him good luck. because I just really wasn't going to deal with that. That thing was dreadful, dreadfully slow. But, I mean, in as much as the improvements that Windows 10 has made in making the system faster, you can't help that at all. So, but also in other Chromebook news, Dell is, there was some like other conference or something somewhere, and Dell announced a new line of education Chromebooks. So,
and you know, honestly, I've always really liked the Dell Chromebooks. They've always felt really well built. The only thing that I never did like that they do is some of the models, they put this clear glass over the whole front of the LCD.
Yeah.
It wasn't directly on the LCD or anything. It kind of stood off from it. And I get it. It was meant to protect it from cracks, but it just got cracked.
Yeah, I've noticed that, like, with a lot of touchscreen machines, that they put that glass.
Oh, these weren't even the touch ones I have.
Oh, really?
I'm too cheap to buy the touch ones.
Oh, that's just interesting. So, but we got new Dell Chromebooks, and Dell Chromebooks are always more expensive than everybody else, from what I can see. They're good Chromebooks. I mean, we bought a couple of them here to try out to see how they were, and they worked fine. And so I have some teachers just using them. If I have to, like, give a teacher a Chromebook for whatever reason, they get the Dells. But I'm really interested in the Chromebook 11As, because
I am too. I think you should buy a couple of them and let me borrow one too.
I know, right? So, but the convention was good. I saw some vendors that I deal with on a regular basis that actually came into town. Well, came into San Antonio. And so it was just nice to put some faces to names and voices, and saw some really interesting stuff.
I say, howdy, Mike, if you're listening.
Yeah, no,
I love you, dude. You're awesome.
He's a real nice guy, even in person. So CDWG actually had this like whole room reserved for like a demo room of like all the stuff that they brought. And I remember when I went, I think Sunday night when we went ahead and got our badges and stuff, so we didn't have to do it Monday morning, and we were just kind of walking around. Kind of getting the lay of the land. Very big convention center. You're probably easily walking 7 miles a day at that place. But I saw all of CDW stuff in their crates piled up in this room. I was like, well, I know where their booth is.
No kidding.
So they brought a lot of stuff. There was a lot of interactive displays. There was a lot of virtual reality stuff this year. And, of course, there's document cameras and interactive display mounts that can raise up and down and whole bunch of stuff. Saw a few 3D printers, a couple of printing companies themselves, and a lot of software-based stuff.
Oh, don't you just love printing?
Yeah, it's the worst. So it was a good convention. I mainly go for the exhibit hall, just because I get to go see some new stuff. Like I get, because some things that I use, like the iBoss and the Impero software, they actually have cloud versions that are really intriguing. And like a little bit maybe more cost effective, and so I might look into those in the near future. But it was a very good conference. I got to do a 3-hour introduction to Lego Mindstorm EV3 robotics thing.
It's a fun platform, isn't it?
It was very fun. I want one for the house, but it's $400, and so don't know how
check out eBay.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's some crooked old ex-tech guy.
Yeah, so. Very, very, very fun platform. A little bit worried that if I got involved in a robotics program, I might spend more time building the Lego Mindstorms myself than letting the kids do it. So that's what I do.
Yeah, and they can actually program in Java and C with that platform. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think you can do whatever. I mean, you can even, the person that taught the class says you can even make your own programming language and program the thing if you wanted to.
It basically runs anything. As long as you use their APIs, it's awesome. It's cool.
Yeah, it's very, I mean, so we made a... We made these little rovers and we made them dance. So that was pretty cool. We used like a touch sensor. So like if it touched, it stopped. Very neat. And it's got a whole bunch of sensors. But I'll put a link in the show notes to the EV3. It's an older platform. It's like 4 years old, I think, now. But it looks like this is only their third robotics thing that Lego has done.
Yeah.
So they last a long time. And so...
Well, they had to release something new because you probably have some of it at your school too. The Vex products have been kind of taking over everything.
No, man. We just started getting into EV3s, and this is like the first robotics thing that we're had.
Oh, okay. So. Well, just know that there's a huge other platform out there called Vex, and it's not Lego. It's more like a Rector. It's all metal components.
Yeah.
And you get like the actual servos and things like that, and it's just a little bit different, but they build a lot of pretty cool stuff with it.
And I did find out that if you have some of the older Lego stuff, the older sensors that you can use are actually will work on the EV3s. It's just that the EV3 sensors will not work on the older stuff.
Correct.
I'll put a link in the show notes. So today, we've talked before in the past about I have this testing application that I have to push out to my iPads. And the way that they want you to do it, and the reason why this is, well, they want you to do it via enterprise certificate. And if you've like followed any tech news lately, there's been a bit of a kerfuffle between Facebook and Google and Apple as far as how Facebook and Google are using their enterprise certificates. As far as deploying like intern, it's for like deploying internal apps.
And, yeah, it's for testing, for usage.
And the more Apple is digging into this, the more they are finding that there are people out there that are using these enterprise certificates to push out like pirated apps, ad-free Spotify, pornography, everything you can think of. It's almost like a way of jailbreaking the iPhone without jailbreaking it.
But you're only using horrible examples. You also got to use the other examples. Sometimes people just want to load an application not through the App Store. But I think this is actually exposing something that Google has right and Apple doesn't. Now, Apple likes their walled garden, but obviously people want another method to install apps on their iOS devices.
Oh, I agree. And I think there's actually a class action lawsuit about this with Apple. But, I mean, the things that Facebook and Google were doing with the enterprise certificates and their apps or whatever is a little bit questionable. Facebook was having this app. It was like a VPN app or something that basically captured every bit of data and information that's on these phones. And they were selling it to, like, kids. Well, they were not selling it, but they were advertising it to kids, offering them gift certificates if they sent them all this data from their phone.
Yeah.
And Google was apparently doing something similar. But I don't think they were offering gift
cards. I think the funniest one with Google is the one for their tram pickup.
Yeah, it's their internal stuff. And I personally
don't think in Google, come on now. Don't let your employees use iOS devices. You got your own platform. That's like the Linux kernel teams using MacBooks. It's just wrong.
But, I mean, I get it. I get them wanting to... like they have these internal apps like their transit pickup or their own little personal shuttle service. That doesn't need to be in the App Store for everybody in the world to download. I get the necessity of this. It's just being kind of taken advantage of.
It is.
And in my instance with this testing app, I think it's just because the people are lazy. Because I don't think their app is doing anything that wouldn't be allowed in the App Store. I just don't know why they just won't put it in the App Store.
So, if we report them, are they going to get it pulled?
I don't know. I hope not, because...
Can we report them? Can I report them, please?
Well, no, because I got to do this testing.
I won't report it till the testing starts.
And here's the thing. That's how they want you to do it. I actually did a workaround to their enterprise certificate for installation. If you open, like, the mconfig file, I think, that you download, you can actually get a URL to the actual IPA file. And I just... pop that into Jamf and I push it out as if it was like a local internal app.
And nice. So you're using your own enterprise cert.
Yeah, I'm basically using my own enterprise cert for my supervised devices to get around, because I have it disabled on my iPads that people can trust enterprise certificates to install things. And I didn't want to have to go through all the trouble to allow that just to install this app and then deny it again, and if it doesn't work, then it's like, what do you want to do? And so it's like, I reached out to Jamf and I was like, what can I do? And they're like, well, let's try this, and it seemed to work. So that's how I even get around the enterprise app or the enterprise certificate, is to just push it out from Jamf. And
I love it.
And I get, and you know, I think that's kind of the point of the enterprise certificate. It's for like organization owned devices. I don't think it was originally intended for me to share a enterprise certificate over the internet for you to install my app.
Oh, I mean,
that's why they bought TestFlight.
I was about to say they call it an enterprise certificate for your enterprise.
I mean, I know some kids here that have something installed that's basically that thing from, what is it, Kodi, that allowed you to stream whatever from wherever. They basically installed an enterprise certificate. He showed it to me. He's like, man, you need to get this app. And so I said, let me see it. I said, you mind if I look at something? He's like, yeah, go ahead. So I went to the profiles to see how it installed. It installed with an enterprise certificate. And so it makes me wonder, though, it's like, what are those apps doing? I mean,
depending on what rights that they have, they could do whatever they want.
Well, let me tell you what that testing app is doing somehow.
Besides not working?
Yeah, besides not working well. On the back end of that website, where we like create classes and put students in teachers' groups and stuff like that, you're only allowed to put the teacher on one device, and so you're not allowed to use multiple devices for the class. That back end of that testing, which is unrelated to anything that I have running here, is actually pulling the asset tag numbers from my iPads. And that is a thing that I pop into Jamf, which I'm assuming Jamf will then kind of pop it into something that's in the iOS as far as like a label or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that TPR, that testing app is pulling that information. It's pulling its username. It's pulling its serial number. It's pulling its asset tag information. So it is getting information from that iPad. I just don't know what all information that thing is getting from this iPad. Is it watching everything that these kids are doing on those iPads, or what? I mean, I just don't know. And at this point, after seeing all this stuff with Facebook and Google, I already didn't like it. Now I just don't trust it, you know?
You'll never know.
I probably won't. And more than likely, I won't care. But it's something that honest. And like next week, we're going to talk about like some security, because I came away a little bit paranoid from TCA about some things, and I want to talk to you about it next week. But it's just a little worrisome about it's like what data is getting out. It's like, how did it get those asset tag information? I just don't know, and I'm kind of curious.
Because you gave it permission to. When you installed that profile.
Well, I didn't install the profile. That's the thing. I just installed the app. So it's just crazy. Hey, listeners. I just wanted to take a quick break to let you know that our episode this week is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download with a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/educatingtech. You can choose a title from over 180,000 books. At the time I got this information from them, I'm sure it's a little bit outdated now. I'm sure they have a lot more. And you can listen on whatever device you use. You can check the App Store for your platform and find the Audible app. It's a great app. It's great to listen to. The book I'm currently listening to is the first book in the Mortal Engines series. I saw the movie Mortal Engines, and I was like, hey, this is a pretty good movie. And, of course, the books are always better. And so I used a credit and got the book, and so I'm listening to it. So far, it's a pretty good story. Looking forward to the next three installments to it. But, yeah, so give it a shot. Audibletrial.com/educatingtech. Give Audible a shot. And thank you to Audible for supporting our show. But, you know, speaking of exploits and bad things happening, Apple apparently also had a facepalm. I call it the facepalm bug. Apparently FaceTime was broken. Group FaceTime was broken.
Was it broken, or was it a feature that accidentally got exposed?
Who knows at this point? Either way, it was bad. And so it was so bad, they like shut down group FaceTime on the back end. And if
well, they needed to.
And they pushed out a fix, and the fix was delayed. It took them a little bit. It took them a week longer to get the fix out than what they originally said. And then, like, you have to be running iOS 12.1.4, I think, to be able to get group FaceTime anymore. If you're on anything less than that, it is disabled. I mean, you can't
have
it.
That's a perfect way for planned obsolescence to take effect.
Yeah, just release bugs and then...
yeah, and say, oh, well, I'm sorry, you can't get it unless you're on this platform.
We call it eavesdrop mode. But what was happening is, yeah, like, you were making the call, but and you were hearing and seeing what was going on the other end. Before the call was answered.
Before they answered.
Yeah, and so it was the eavesdrop mode. And so it was very very peculiar, I guess, to say the least. But it was just – but they got it fixed, and it's just very interesting. But it was a bad thing. And now I think the kid that found it is going to war because he wants his bug bounty. And I don't blame him. I would want my
and
money,
he,
too.
He deserves his bug bounty.
Yeah, so – but yes, it was just – it was a very interesting week for Apple. Well, a couple weeks, I guess. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks at this point. But it was just crazy between the little war it had with Facebook and Google, and which, you know, Facebook needs to be put in check anyway, because of some of the stuff that they do.
I personally loved – I wish Google would have done what I suggested they do, pull all their apps from the App Store.
That would have been – well, you know,
if they want to shoot over the bow, you know, fine, gone.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, do that, and then what happens when Apple stops giving them $2 billion a year for them to be the default search on the device?
Well, that's fine. I mean, they don't need it.
So it's just kind of interesting.
I say, I think Apple users need Google more than Google needs Apple.
Yeah, no kidding. Because like, what are you going to use for identity management with iOS? Absolutely nothing. So, but speaking of some Google stuff, tell me about this thing that has changed that was around and now it's better. Tell me.
Oh, well, it's still in beta right now, but if you are a Google person, you have probably ran into a product called Chrome Remote Desktop. It's actually more than just an RDP thing. It's actually, you can use it for remote support for any device as well. It comes in handy if you have students that are inaccessible. You can fire up a Chrome Remote support session, and they can give you kind of like how all the other remote things work. They give you an access key, and you connect into them, and you can see their session. But they've also got it to kind of like a go to my PC, where you can connect into your own devices remotely using their tools. Well, before, you always had to have a thick client installed to even use it to connect to another machine. Well, now they've introduced a beta feature because Google does beta. It'll probably be beta for about 6 years.
Yeah, I know. How long was Gmail in beta?
I think it still is. Let's be honest.
I agree.
So they have a site you can go to now. It's called remotedesktop.google.com. And what it does is it lets you use your Chrome remote desktops in the browser. So you don't have to load that client. So you can even access them through, let's say, a public session now, which is really useful.
Yeah, that seems very useful, especially like in the instance that I had a user of mine that was at the service center for a conference, and they needed something installed for the session that they were in, and they don't have admin rights to their machine. And I tried every which way to Sunday to get into this machine to be able to install it, and I just couldn't do it. But had this been around, or had I known about this, I could have just done this and got into there, sent them that link or whatever, let them click on it, gave me access, and then boom, I could get it installed.
Yeah, but I mean, the Git support thing does require that old thick client to be installed, because it's still just like you're connecting to one of your machines remotely. But it's one of those things that you can deploy out with your enterprise and it already be there.
Yeah, that's just
it's super useful.
Seems handy. I mean,
it works. It's like another feature that nobody ever uses, the remote desktop support tool. Some people don't even know it exists.
Yeah, well, I use it now because it's built into System Center, and I love it.
It works great.
In fact, I've basically told my supervisor, don't renew Dangware for me. I'm just going to use System Center.
Yeah, it works great. I didn't have to worry about not renewing it because it hadn't been renewed in about 6 years here.
Oh, there you go. But yeah, it's just kind of interesting. So like if I deploy this client, does it go with like some information that ties it to something that I own, or like my Google domain, that kind of I can go and get a list of everybody and just like click and connect? Or
no, it doesn't still require the code. It still requires the code, but I imagine you could use some app script stuff to do it.
And just try to get in, like maybe throw all of mine in like a Google Sheet or something like that. And I just,
I'm sure there's some API stuff that they'll expose for it later, because what it feels like to me is they're moving this direction. They're going to offer this all-in-one solution, kind of like we get with Impero and GoGuardian, those kind of things. That's kind of the one piece that they're missing.
And Google's will probably come in at a great price for education too.
It'll probably be free as long as they can scrape your data.
That's fine. It's like I did a faculty staff meeting thing after school the other day, and I talked about like some new features in Gmail. And I talked about like the autocomplete and the predictive text that it kind of added in. And I'm like, you know, Google's an ad company. They read your email. I said, in theory, they're not supposed to read our email. But I want to know is, how is this machine learning trying to figure out what I want to respond to this email with without reading the email? So just like they've got to be doing something. So, and I was like, and if you're paranoid like me, if it'll make you feel better, you can turn it off. So that's just really neat, because I love tools like GoToAssist and LogMeIn and Join.me or whatever they all used to be.
Oh, absolutely. And my go-to is still AnyDesk right now.
They're just so expensive, you know? If you want like the full-blown enterprise product, unless you probably use like some open source thing. But TeamViewer, is that a thing still?
TeamViewer is still a thing. Microsoft does own it.
And Microsoft owns TeamViewer, really?
Yeah, they have for a few years.
I did not know that.
Yeah, they don't really let on they do.
That's crazy. I knew a company that bought like an enterprise version of TeamViewer, and they said it was super expensive.
Yeah, Modern Group just bought one for their enterprise.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, so having something like this will be very, very handy, and I'll push out the thick client. I don't care. I don't mind.
Yeah, I mean, you push it out through your Google console. I mean, and it'll work on Windows. It'll work on whatever platform. That's what's really cool about it.
Yeah. So as we wrap up today, let's talk a little bit about, and it seems to be vulnerability day, I guess. You found an article about a vulnerability in Ubiquiti equipment. And I kind of read into this, and from what I can see, it doesn't seem to be the Unify line.
No, it's ROS.
The ROS. And so, like, if you're running Ubiquiti wireless or switches or stuff, you should be okay as far as this goes. But I run some AeroS stuff because I run the wireless bridges for my press boxes. And I know some other schools that I've recommended this to are running some bridges that are the AeroS. And so this kind of is interesting to me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and this is actually the bread and butter of Ubiquiti's profits. I mean, now, yes, they're turning towards UniFi more and more, but this is what made Ubiquiti who they are, is they're a wireless ISP company. They sell gear for people to get internet service in places that otherwise would be unfeasible.
Yes.
So this affects all of that gear. And it doesn't seem too terrible. I mean, it's more like for the discovery, whatnot. So it's more of a denial attack than anything. It's not like they can take over. It's just, it'll make it quit working, which sucks.
But yeah, so it's not too dangerous, but I'm sure there'll be a patch out pretty soon. And
And if you're running UNMS, you can push that patch out automatically.
I do love me some UNMS. That is pretty great stuff right there. I'm ready for it to integrate the UniFi line too, and so you can do everything in one place.
I don't think they're going to do that because I think it would muddy the waters pretty quick.
It would, because like the UniFi has like sometimes a different feature set than what the
It has a huge different feature set,
because I can
AeroS is, man, they're, it's really geared towards the provider, where UniFi is geared towards the client.
Yeah, so. But you know, it would just be nice to have one place to say update firmware.
It would be. I mean, you could use your UniFi as bridges through the mesh features in it if you wanted.
Well, but the nano stations are just so good. I mean, even the ones that I get, they're so old, but they're still so good.
Oh yeah, they're dirt cheap too.
I know. I just had to replace the ones that were connecting our sign at the elementary school, our little electronic digital LED sign. The people that put it in put like these ingenious bridges or something in there, and one of them wasn't working. And so I was like, you know what, this is going away. Let's get some more Ubiquities, and we hooked them up, and it works great, and I have no problems. But that's our show for this week. For links and show notes for this episode, you can go to educatingtech.net/61. You can send us any questions, comments, or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter with @educatingtech. And you can find the link in the show notes to join our Discord to come hang out with us. We've had a couple of new people join up, which is kind of interesting. To see what Chris is up to.
I'll give y'all PowerShell scripts too, if you ask.
Yeah, there you go. He's everybody's PowerShell hero. To see what Chris is up to, you can find him on Twitter at @feeks, and I am at @twistofmatt. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and leaving us a rating and or review in Apple Podcasts to help us grow our audience. Does Google Podcast have like a rating thing where you could do things?
I think somebody might have to use it for us. Yeah. Hold on.
And didn't you put us like in Spotify or something?
Yeah, we're in Spotify, and Spotify bought Anchor as well.
I saw that. It's interesting. I don't know how I actually feel about that, but it's very interesting.
Well, I mean, it shows that they're wanting to make more advancements into the podcast genre, which is cool. I like it.
Yeah, because podcasting is where it's at, man. It's where it's at. I like it. So it's a great medium, as you can tell. We're 61 episodes in, so it's a great medium.
Oh, yeah. And sooner or later, we're going to get this guy on video.
Not happening. So that's it for this week. We'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.